From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. Colin Molloy writes and sings for his band, The Decembrists. We're big admirers and fans of his songwriting, and that surely shows in our archive of live concerts and songs at the NPR Music site. And every once in a while, Colin Molloy takes leave of his band and goes out on his own with just a bunch of acoustic guitars. We webcast his 2006 solo concert, and now there's a CD of select songs from that tour on Capitol Records called Colin Molloy Sings Live. Colin Molloy is doing a spring tour this year, and he stopped by our Washington, D.C. studios to play DJ for us. Mm-hmm. So thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
One of the things I'm so in love with when I saw you perform live, I get tired of going to shows where the performer may or may not really care about me as an audience person, and I like being talked to. It doesn't have to happen every time I see a show, but it's nice to be some engagement where I know that you as a performer changed because us in the audience got along with you or didn't get along with you. Did you grow up seeing performers that you were enchanted by?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's why I ended up doing this, I think, because of the people that I saw. And there was a few really flashpoint moments for me, I think. Certainly seeing Young Fresh Fellows, I saw when I was like 16 years old in a little club in Portland, and they were, you know, peers of the Replacements and had the same kind of vibe of, you know, not really taking themselves seriously on stage. And then also saw the band, a DC band called Unrest. I remember seeing them in Portland, and this sort of beautiful ecstatic moment in the show where the bass player and the guitar player just caught up and just playing kind of one chord over and over again, just started wrestling with each other, just starting to trip each other on stage. And it was just, it was so sweet to see that, like to see them not only performing, but also not just trying to put on a show, but being themselves and being goofy and trying to make it entertaining for themselves. And I think that it made the show that much better for the audience too, I think.
Were you playing music back when you were 16 going to shows yet?
I was learning guitar at the time, and I think I was in a band in high school at the time, but it was a while before I was really doing it seriously.
Musically, besides bands, who was it that was your musical guide? Did you have one?
Well, my uncle Paul was was the youngest of my mom's siblings, and he was about 12 years older than me, and so he was in college when I was, you know, going into my teens, like preteens, and he was discovering music and playing in bands, and he was in school at University of Oregon, and he would send me, you know, mixtapes and dubbed copies of records that he was discovering in what I think is kind of the heyday of college rock. And I grew up in Helena, Montana, so I didn't really have much access to the music through the radio, or, you know, and this was also pre-internet.
Yes. What year are we talking about here?
I think I got my first mixtape from him in like 86 or something like that. So I was 12 years old. And then he was sending them to my sister and I, but he soon discovered that I was the one who was sort of voraciously, you know, drinking, taking these in, and he just started sending me all the time, you know, all these tapes, these amazing tapes.
And since you're here to play DJ for us, something early on, pick us something we can play.
I think one of the first records I ever sought out myself, and with a little help from my uncle, too. I remember the first time him coming to visit and playing this band Skritti Politti and their record Cupid and Psyche, and explaining to my sister and I that it was Wham for smart people, and so I bought the record and totally became enamored with it, and it's really stuck with me, oddly enough. So there's a song called A Little Knowledge on that, which is really great, and I actually have just picked up doing some home recording with Logic, and in an effort to explore what Logic can do, I tried recording a version of A Little Knowledge, like start to finish, mapping out all of the MIDI sounds.
The little FM everything. MIDI keyboard stuff.
Yeah, trying to nail, get every single thing right. And it's sort of an ongoing project.
Let's give a listen to Skritti Politti. The song is called, I've forgotten.
A Little Knowledge.
Thank you.
Thank you.
cats are here.
Boy, it's so dated.
it is, but I mean, considering the world that it was in, you know, and what they were going for, you know, and since then, I've you know, he's Green Gartside. He's gone on to do other records, and he was a rough trade act at the very beginning, and Skritti Plitti prior to this record was kind of like a weird anarcho art band.
Yeah, you wouldn't know from that song.
And the stuff is the early stuff. They just re-released it, and it's really obtuse and really strange and really political. And then he just decided that he was going to move to New York and make like a really mainstream, accessible pop record. And he did. And just the way that, I mean, listening to all the layers and stuff like that is pretty phenomenal for a keyboard record.
One of the nice things about your solo show, the time I went to see, which was 2006, out in the lobby, they were selling a Shirley Collins a little EP that you had done. And I've certainly listened to your music, know from listening to it, you must have a love of English folk music. Mm-hmm. But picking Shirley Collins really clinched it for me, because I loved Shirley Collins when I was growing up.
And, oh, yeah?
And in my teens, she was really something, because she influenced all the people I loved, who, you know, the Richard Thompsons of the world and the Steel Eye Spans. And so I was just so happy that she lives beyond the people who were growing up in the 70s and so forth, mm-hmm. and the 60s. How did you find Shirley Collins? And she is, for those who don't know, I'll put it in a nutshell, you can put in more, which is a folk artist, part of the first British folk revival in the 50s and became mm-hmm. influential for the people in the 60s.
Yeah, I discovered her just by, you know, I have had this long-standing love of English and American folk songs. And at the time, it was right around the time we were recording Picaresque, and I was getting really into Fairport Convention, Legion Leaf, that record, and
a great one.
And it was starting to follow, kind of suddenly discovering that I was really liking a lot of this British folk revival stuff, and of course all paths from there lead to Shirley Collins. And I think I heard a snippet of her voice on the internet or something like that, and was immediately so struck by it that I just ran out and bought the box set, kind of thing. You know, it was like instant love at first sight. And since then, have always really come back to her, especially her early stuff that she was doing in the 50s. I mean, the stuff that she was doing later is like really strong and really influential, but there's something about those early recordings, just her voice and a banjo, or her voice and a guitar, that really striking in their kind of rendition and reading of those old folk songs that feel really timeless, feel like you would be listening to them in the way they were intended to be listened to.
I don't know if you knew this about her, but when Alan Lomax, the famous guy who came and did, you know this story?
Yeah.
Because of the McCarthy era, he was blacklisted. He went to England, fell in love with Shirley Collins, and eventually took Shirley Collins to the American South.
Right, yeah, I learned that she was part of the Lomax thing. Yeah, right. And then she went back to England to do the same thing and sparked the British folk revival.
Do you mind if I play a cut front that you did that's on your new album that you're singing Shirley Collins?
By all means.
Great. Let's play Shirley Collins, you doing Shirley Collins, your best imitation of Shirley Collins, the song Barbara Allen.
Was round and about last night in Miss Tide, when the green leaves were swelling, that young Jimmy Gove of the West Country fell in love with Barbara Allen. She sent his men into the town, to the place where she was dwelling. saying, will you come to my master, dear? If your name be Barbary Allen. And slowly, slowly got she up, and slowly came she nigh him. And all she said when there she came, young man, I think you're dying. Oh yes, I'm sick, I'm very sick, indeed I think I'm dying. But a word from you would revive me again, oh lovely Barbary Allen. Do you recall, young man, she said, when the red wine you were spilling, how you made the lady's health go round, and you slighted Barbary Allen. And death is printed on his face, and all his heart is stealing. But still he cried as she left his side, hard-hearted Barbary Allen.
There's 400,000 versions of this song, but the essence of the song is...
It's basically that this young man on his deathbed sends for Barbary Allen, thinking that
he
loves Barbary Allen. And that by her, you know, professing love to him, that he will be revived. But she spurns him because he's been kind of a lout and a gad about town, and then so she spurns him and walks away, and then he dies, and then in the Shirley Collins version, she goes home and says that Jimmy died for me today, I'll die for him tomorrow, and then she dies. Mm. So a lot of people in old folk songs have the great fortune of being able to choose when they die. I think I'll die today.
Yeah. And she says to him while he's lying on a deathbed, it's like, die, so you're dying.
Yeah, basically.
But then she's got all this, is it guilt or what?
I don't know. That's the thing.
That's the twist of the song that it is always a hard
one to
get.
I guess, and I suspect, I haven't done much research, but a lot of times when there's these weird leaps in logic in folk songs, in the version you hear them, you kind of accept that that's just the way it is. There's just a weird hole. Mm-hmm. Typically, the people drop verses and things like that. So, I think there's other things that play, potentially other things at play. I like that, you know, she spurns him, turns around, he dies, and then she decides that she'll die too. There's something just weird. Mm-hmm. And very
some of the versions of the song,
that.
I don't remember if your version does this, but their graves are together and they grow a vine and a rose and they come back together.
A
rose.
That's the thing, the great thing about, people's individual arrangements of these songs, as they've been passed down over the years, they shed and take on verses, and so you kind of have a bunch to choose from.
Got another favorite one. You were turned on to folk music that a singer you loved.
Yeah, Ann Briggs, who I became equally obsessed with, who is somebody who recorded only a couple records that were released, recorded another record but never released it, and it was finally released in the 90s. She was definitely a big part of the folk revival, you know, was doing these tours with A.L. Lloyd and Ewan McCall and the... in the late 50s and early 60s. And
more of a lot of the Scottish singers she was working with. So she was British.
Yeah, she was British, but she did do a lot of Scottish songs.
Which tended to be more of the hippie folks, the Incredible String Band people.
And she was sort of loosely attached to that, and she was definitely, well, you know, Sandy Denny has, both Sandy Denny and Richard Thompson have songs about her. I think the Land and the Sea, or there's a Sandy Denny song, I think, on the Fotheringay record that's about her.
No, I didn't know that. I know the song, but...
Just talking about how envious Sandy is of Anne, and also The Richard Thompson song "Bee's Wing" is about Anne Briggs, huh. apparently, because she was kind of the real deal. You know, she was a total just kind of traveler and never stayed in one place and was always, you know, traveling around the country in like a little horse and carriage and just being like the gypsy that everybody was idealizing at the time. And so she grew sick of the sound of her recorded voice and just retired from music and moved to some hinterland in Scotland and became an organic, like, Saturday market grocer.
This is a little like the Vashti Bunyan story.
Yeah. I think Vashti was akin to her. Though Vashti always strikes me as more of more influenced by the pop side of things. I think of Anne Briggs as being like a true, you know, coming through A.L. Lloyd and Ewan McCall and Shirley Collins. Even though she wrote her own songs, I think a lot of her strongest things were interpretations of old folk songs.
Well, let's give a listen to Anne Briggs. What song you want to pick?
This is Willie O'Winsbury, which she does as an arrangement that was originally done by Sweeney's Men, I think, an arrangement for Bouzouki.
The king has been a prisoner.
Another great folk tale. I think this one more about, I think it's about a woman who gets pregnant by a
gypsy. Yeah. It's one of the gypsy makes good folk songs.
And the king doesn't kill the gypsy.
Yeah, but it's really interesting. I think it's
the king's daughter.
There's a moment of ancient homoeroticism in it. There's a great moment where you know, the king says, "Fetch me this Willie O'Winsbury, for hang it, he should be," you know, because he's going to kill him for knocking up his daughter while he was away. And Willie O'Winsbury shows up, and the king is so taken by his beauty that he says, "If you were a woman as you are a man, my bedfellow, you would have been." So he falls in love with Willie O'Winsbury, and then says, "Okay,
you can give him gold."
And then it moves into the kind of the gypsy makes good, and says, "I'll give you all my lands and all my gold." And he refuses it, and only just takes his daughter, and they ride off in the sunset, very romantic.
I love these stories.
They're great.
And you often seem to write stories that, to me, are not from experience, where, you know, anyone will tell you the best way to write is to write from what you know, but Mm-hmm. You certainly don't do that, and you do okay.
Yeah, I know. I got to a point where I think I just was more interested in writing outside of my realm of experience. It was more interesting to me to be in kind of an outside narrator looking in on the lives of these people rather than mining my own life, which, you know, to be honest, I don't really find that interesting or compelling. I'm more interested in kind of creating and exposing these other characters.
You, when I saw you live, you wrote a, you played a song. Now, you'll have to help me in the timeline here. This was probably, it could have been April 2006, maybe, and you wrote a song about a newborn.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether you had that newborn yet or you...
Yeah, it was January 2006 when the tour was, and my son, Hank, was born in the last week of February. So that song was, had this song about it was written right after we discovered we were pregnant, and it was just about, like, you know, trying to make sense of it all.
And here's a song that's really not from experience, but I think you nailed it so well, and you also touched on something, you know, that's very hard to do, which is to write a precious song without being Debbie Gibson. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
but
it was a delicate thing, and I mean, I don't know that I'll try it again. It was maybe a moment of weakness.
So can we play this song, Wonder? It's from Colin Sings Live. I'm here with Colin Molloy. All the songs that we play here in just the minutes or minute and a half that we play will be on the website at npr.org/allsongs. Let's give a listen to the song, Wonder.
My darling, what wonder have we wrought here? It's weird and it's wonderful, dear. An ankle, an earlobe, an elbow bone. It's weird how it wonderful grows. And it was only me. May this tree come out of two. My darling, what wonder have we wrought here? It's weird and it's wonderful. Tumbling in Dublin, and next thing you know, a weird and a wonderful show. All tendons and rib cage and beating heart, a weird and a wonderful start.
You really did it. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
That's a touchy subject to write a song about a newborn, you know, and make it work.
Well, thank you.
Take us somewhere completely different.
Well, I guess since the subject of this kind of DJ session was about influential songs, I could not but include a song by the Smiths, the great Smiths. This one's The Boy with the Thorn in His Side, which was, I think, my first introduction to the Morrissey school of self-deprecating irony. I think he really nails it on this one.
Good.
There lies a murderous desire for love.
Now Johnny Marr these days is walking around Portland.
Yeah, he's in. I ran into him at the IKEA in Portland about a month ago, and he was buying some throw pillows and some tumblers, and we chatted for a while in front of the elevators.
A funny world. Who would have thunk it?
Very strange.
Thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me in.
Colin Malloy, he's on tour with a solo tour. I say solo tour. Is there someone playing alongside
it's
you?
Just me. Okay. It's just like the last time.
Okay, with a skull and a...
Oh, right. Who's in... Well, no, there's a little mermaid icon named Consuela and a crystal named Cornwallis, and I'm sure there'll be more people on that stage as the tour goes on.
Great. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thank you.
Much appreciated. Colin Malloy. His new CD is called Colin Malloy Sings Live. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.
Meet me on my vast veranda, my sweet untouched Miranda. And while the seagulls are crying, we fall, but our souls are flying. In all my love, in all my love, my love. And oh, my love, oh, my love. And oh, my love, my love. We both go down. Wait for it. Together.
I'm Bob Boylan with a quick reminder to read our blog. This week's hot topic on the All Songs Considered blog, design the next audio format. If you could dream about something more convenient than the CD and more tactile than the MP3, what would it be? Fire up your imagination or just read what others have had to say at the All Songs Considered blog. Go to npr.org/allsongs and look for the link to our blog. And if you like these DJ shows, there's a whole bunch of them in our archives, including Tom York of Radiohead, Tom Verlaine of Television, M. Ward, Jens Lechman, and so many more. All that at npr.org/allsongs. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.